Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so we're now 5 days away, as of the recording of this episode, from the biggest Japan real estate summit yet, this coming weekend in Ebisu Shibuya, and online in the streaming room for those who can't attend in person. Tickets are selling fast, as they do every time, and we are all thrilled to welcome you once more, and this time to an expanded two-day event with a remarkable speakers roster. Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp, who are also one of our sponsors, along with Robert Miller of innovatious.com, Tracy Northcott, Blanca Kobayashi, Anton Warman, Matt Ketchum, Take Kurosawa and Joey Stockermans, the Akiyamart boys, Daigo Sato, Alicia Wang, Nick Woolsey, and of course myself. Between us, we'll be covering all of your hot topics from mortgages and family homes to short-term stay management, investment properties and investment loans for residents and non-residents, renovations, both commercial and DIY, taxes, property research and market data, as well as strategies for leveraging your property purchase or rental into a Japanese visa for those looking to relocate to Japan. Plenty of breakout rooms and hands-on workshops on everything under the sun. And most importantly, dozens of like-minded folks like yourselves with a keen interest in Japan's real estate market and all of its various sectors and quirks. The extended format also gave us the opportunity to give you more networking time so that you can take those connections and carry on the conversation on your own. So tickets will only be available for purchase until this coming Friday, assuming we don't run out of room before then. But if you're joining us for the gala event at Kichiri on Saturday evening, which is going to be an absolutely fabulous all-you-can-drink course dinner, those ticket numbers have to be finalized by October 2nd for the restaurant to start prepping. So if you've got a ticket but haven't booked the dinner seats yet, or even if you can't make it during the day on Saturday but want to join the dinner only, I've already heard from a couple of people who are doing exactly that. You really need to get onto summit.realestate.jp right now and book that gala dinner ticket immediately. For the event itself as well, if you're waiting for the last minute, please be aware that we will absolutely not be able to sell tickets on the door. We simply don't have the facilities or the manpower to do that. You will have to purchase those tickets online and in advance. So again, summit.realestate.jp. Don't be shy. Pause the podcast right now. Get over there and secure your spot. We can't wait to see you all with us at this fourth iteration of the Japan Real Estate Summit in person or in the streaming room chat. It's just going to be, I'm out of words. It's going to be absolutely fabulous. So for today's episode, two back-to-back audio conversations again, both of them on a similar topic, but with a bit of a twist. This first one is with buyers who are interested in purchasing a condo unit in Hokkaido for their own personal use, mainly as a holiday apartment. And they wanted to know some of the more basic stuff, how our services work, which areas of Japan we can cover, spoiler alert, all of them. What are the consequences of buying in older versus newer buildings? What's the best time of the year to be purchasing? And what's a good budget for this type of purchase? We also broke down the purchase process itself, the various fees involved and when they're all due, how long does the entire purchase normally take, and a lot more. So enjoy this conversation, and I'll see you again for the second call on the other side.
Okay, yes. So again, I have no memory to speak of whatsoever. So please refresh my memory, especially now that you're telling me we spoke a year ago. I'm sure I don't remember a thing. So please refresh my memory.
We're interested in buying a mansion apartment in Sapporo.
Yep.
We narrowed down a few neighborhoods that we're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our budget lined up, thanks to the favorable yen right now. And so we just had some questions about the engagement contract and some process questions. And then I think we're ready to engage your company.
Okay, sounds good. So let's answer the questions, but I'll caveat all of that afterwards to say that we're a bit swamped with clients, so we're working in a bit of a different method. But first, let's go ahead with the document and ask me any questions you have on it.
Awesome. Good. And I also think you said to Tom that you wanted to sort of talk through things as well, and that's perfectly fine too. Would you prefer to please walk us through your your description of services, or would you like us to go through it and ask you questions?
Oh, no, just go straight into the question. That's fine.
Okay. Cool. Tom, do you want to drive, or would you like me to?
Oh, go ahead, sorry. You've had a great lesson.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for this. This is super helpful, and there's lots of information in here. It's great to see this, and I'm sure this comes out of lots of client questions over the years, so appreciate you putting this together.
We have been at it for a while, yes.
Yeah, I guess I'll start by my notes are a little bit shaky on this from a year ago, but I think you have worked in Hokkaido and Sapporo previously, but probably less than you work in Tokyo, for example.
No, not at all, actually. Tokyo is mostly a lot less attractive for our customers because properties are a lot pricier there and yields are a lot lower. So we actually do a lot more work in Hokkaido and other cities compared to Tokyo.
Okay. Is there a difference in terms of your approach for Hokkaido versus things that are closer to you, or is it all the same?
Not really. We work with third parties, so we'll try to work with the best real estate agents, best property managers, renovation, repair companies in each and every location. So from our perspective, it really doesn't matter where the property is physically located. We're facilitating services of other third parties.
Got it. Right. And so it sounds then like you have those people in Sapporo.
Definitely in Sapporo City and Otaru City. Other places in Hokkaido, we haven't had too many people purchase yet. But whenever we enter a new location by customer request, then we find locals. Sometimes it's better to use professionals from the nearest big city. So other places in Hokkaido, for example, we might use Sapporo professionals, depending on what's available in those areas.
Okay, cool. There's something we talked about last time about age of buildings, and the reason I'm bringing up this up now is because this is sort of like a budget related question, right? And I think as I understand it, sometimes once a building gets to be a particular age, developers will start sniffing around, and that may affect your ownership of your apartment once a certain number of apartments has been picked up by a developer who wants to rebuild. What is your guidance around, if we wanted to buy an apartment that was older than 20 years, is that risky? Or can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. Older than 20 years is not a problem. But even before considering, an age where developers might start sniffing around, we'd probably recommend to try and aim for 30 years and younger. Because the buildings, these are concrete buildings, so they last obviously longer than wooden houses. But still, when they approach about 40 years of age, is when building expenses, renovations, repairs start, becoming a bit more frequent, and then building fees as a result of that will tend to rise a lot more frequently.
Okay.
So we normally recommend to people to purchase at around 30 years and younger if they can, and then start considering potentially reselling it as it approaches 40 years. It's less of a concern for holiday home shoppers, more of a thing for investors, because when building fees rise exponentially, then yields obviously drop as a result.
Right.
In your case, for holiday home purposes, we're talking for your own personal use, right? Not investment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in your case, it's more a case of look at what the building fees are and try to see if you'd be comfortable with them, let's say, potentially doubling in the next 5 or 6 years, right? And if you're still okay with it, if it goes from, I don't know, $200 to $400 would still be okay for you, then, you know, we'd go for it. But otherwise, try to aim for something a bit younger, maybe.
Okay. That's really good guidance.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm assuming we'll talk about, like, I don't know, like, we live in California, so we're very comfortable with the concept of earthquakes, and we don't live in a house that's particularly earthquake-proof, but it's a little bit of a different question with apartments. Is there age-related sort of earthquake?
1981, so again, well ahead of the age that we'd recommend anyway. We'd probably recommend not to buy anything older than, say, 94, 95, if you can.
Okay, cool.
That's for concrete. For wooden houses, the latest earthquake resistant standards are in the year 2000.
Okay, cool. Are there particular times that are better for apartment hunting than other times of the year? Like, we felt like we saw a lot of stuff come on the market because we've just been looking at listings on our own. We felt like we saw a lot of stuff come on the market, like, maybe in July. And we're wondering, like, is there a gooder time to be going?
There'll be more supply towards the end of every quarter or the beginning of the next quarter, which is why you're seeing it in July. You'll probably see more of them again in October, which is when real estate companies want to either get stuff on or off their books. So they try to sell more towards the end and beginning of the next quarter.
Probably
the peak of that is around the end of the year. So probably around October, November is when you'll see the most listings come online because they also want to get them off their books for the end of the financial year.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. Awesome. I'm going to keep going. Tom, do you want to jump in with anything or do you want to interrupt me?
No, keep going, Sarah.
Okay. The initial deal analysis in your, I'm looking at your document now, that looks great, and I can see why you would have different sort of analyses for investment properties versus personal.
Yeah, with holiday homes, it's not really a deal analysis per se because there's no income involved or yields or anything of that sort. It's more, again, a case of how comfortable you are with what the monthly costs are.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha. So then you would just send us, like, a link to listings that are in sort of publicly available.
Correct. I mean, you would always be the best filter for that because you can look at a layout and location and a few photos and know if it ticks your boxes or not. So maybe combination of you and us researching at the same time and sending lists. With us, it's always going to be a bit more hit and miss, but we're more than happy to do that as well.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Are you comfortable searching on the Japanese websites, by the way?
Very. We've been doing a lot of it. I mean, we're, you know, not that fluent in Japanese, working on it every single day, but with Google Translate, it seems very doable to us.
Yeah, so Sumo at Homes, homes.co.jp, those big ones, and Nifty.
Yeah, Tom, are those all the ones you're hitting?
Yeah, I'm very happy with Sumo. Yeah, that works.
Yep, okay. Just make sure, because those are not specifically investment-oriented websites, they're more generic, so it's a bit hard to find whether the property is tenanted or not. You don't want to buy a tenanted property because not renewing a lease for a long-term tenant is a bit of a hassle in Japan. So best avoid those and focus on the vacant ones. The vacant ones will also mostly have been recently renovated, which is also something attractive for holiday home shoppers.
Okay.
Right.
And then your fee... I see that it's 5%, which is fine.
With the minimum being, for condo units, the minimum is 5% of 5 million yen. So even if you happen to buy something cheaper than that, it's still going to be that 250, okay. 250 plus tax, so 275.
Our budget is around 100,000 US, so I think that's like 15.
That's probably going to be beyond that then, yeah. And we'd be much more comfortable helping you buy something a bit newer in better shape. So that's good. If we can go beyond the 5 million, we're happy.
Yeah. I think we, you know, we would, small is fine, but a little bit, not fancy, but a little nicer would be good for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we care about location. So.
Yeah. Well, 100,000 US is like 16 million or 15 or 16 million, I think, at the moment. Yeah. So that's a great budget, I think.
Yeah. Good. That's great. Yeah. That works for us. Okay. And then, thank you. I see that you're doing translations. Can you walk us through just a little bit, like, we want to make sure we have all of our ducks in a row in terms of, like, having the money, you know, like, just the logistics of the transaction so that we're not scrambling. When we get to the point of signing a contract with you, with you, will that, like, kind of lay out, like, what do we need to do to get ourselves ready to purchase when the time comes?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, sure. So the remittances... The remittances would normally be closer to the date, but if you do want to lock in the rates, because the yen has started creeping upwards recently, so if you do want to lock in the rates, then again, I'll explain how we work at the moment in a minute, but whoever is receiving the funds from you, whether it's us or the real estate agent, can usually hold them for you in advance, even if you don't have a particular property lined up. So you would be able to just lock in the rates and have us hold the funds for you until we actually find the property and proceeding. The actual process would take, normally with condo units, to receive all of the building management information, renovation history, how much they got in reserve funds, all of the things that we want as part of due diligence, we would usually need to first submit an offer, because the listing agent would need to approach the building management company and the seller and sometimes pay a fee to retrieve the latest owner union report. So they're not going to do all of that before they have an offer on the table. And then on the offer, we're going to write pending due diligence of this A, B, C, D, F, and then they will start providing that information and we'll decide if we're proceeding or not. So the offer is not legally binding, but Japan being Japan, everything here is done with, you know, what's expected, the norms and manners and so forth. So if we submit an offer and then pull it back, regardless of due diligence, just because you had a change of heart, then that agent will probably not work with us or any foreigners again. So we ask that, barring due diligence, we only make the offers one at a time and on properties that you're actually happy to proceed with otherwise. And
that
then
makes sense.
Yeah. And then once the offer has been accepted, we'll start receiving, or renegotiated, whatever the case may be, we'll start receiving information for review, and then contract draft and appendixes. So normally about a month from the moment the offer has been accepted is when we'll sign the contract and pay the 10% deposit.
Okay.
And once that's done, the property lawyer will prepare the documents that you'll need to execute for the ownership transfer and send them to you. And then you'll have to get them witnessed, signed and witnessed, and posted the hard copies back to us. So usually, just because you're overseas, about a month from contract is when settlement will take place. Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in web solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. And his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today. Which is when we'll pay the remaining 90% plus any adjustments, like the seller will have paid property tax for the year in advance, so we'll credit them for that. They might have paid building fees in advance, so we'll credit them. So all of that plus the 90% remaining and the realtor fee and the any fee adjustments that we need to make, that's all done on settlement.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's see.
Oh, and legal and registration costs. Sorry, that's due as settlement as well.
Yeah, and I saw somewhere that you mentioned, you know, extra cost for, legally enforceable or certified, I can't remember the exact term, translations, and that's something that we'll probably want to do, and we can talk about that.
So, yeah, we're not official translators. We're not going to be able to provide proper official translations for you. So what we normally do is we summarize the main points that you want to be aware of, and then if you want to get them professionally translated, we'll of course provide the Japanese document. You're welcome to do that. But honestly, for a $20 subscription to ChatGPT, you'll get very professional translation services.
Good to know. Yeah, awesome.
You just need to keep telling it, don't summarize, translate verbatim. After a few times, it gets used to it, and then it does it proper.
I've been using ChatGPT more and more just for everything Japanese related.
Exactly. Same here. It's made my life amazingly easier, but made me even lazy on studying Japanese than I was before.
Yeah, I get it. And then, I mean, one of the things we need to do is just talk through this investment. We're, you know, personal use property, but it's an investment for us with our financial advisors. And so I know they're going to ask us, like, what's your all-in cost on this? And so can you just walk us through a little bit, like, let's say we're spending 15, 16 million yen. There's the 5% fee that we'll pay to you. And then what are the other fees that we're talking about here?
Total purchase costs would vary depending on the price of the property. They're a bit more percentage-wise for cheaper ones and become gradually less percentage-wise as the property becomes pricier, with something around 100,000 or hopefully a bit less depending on what we'll find. I would say probably worst case, including our fee, 18%. So the realtor fee is 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax. And they've also got a minimum fee, but that's probably going to be over that in any case. So let's assume something like 4, 4.5, including the small adjustment there. Call it 4 to 5. Legal and registration fees vary on the official evaluation, which is always going to be different to market price. But normally you can expect them to be somewhere between 2 to 6%. There's a purchase tax statement that comes somewhere between 6 to 24 months, depending on the date of settlement, after settlement, which is, again, varies on official eval, but somewhere between 1.5% to 2.5%.
Okay.
And our fee, which at this budget is 5% plus tax, so 5.5. So worst case scenario, again, we assume 18-ish, hopefully closer to 15, 16.
Okay, cool. That was, I think that's what we had in our head, but since it's been a year, like couldn't remember, you know, where that came from.
You've mentioned investment. I wouldn't consider it an investment in any sense of the word, though, because even if you manage to rent it out, you know, short, medium term, it's basically just going to cover costs and maybe a bit of pocket money. And it's not like it's very likely to gain in value, Japan being, I mean, it's great if it happens, but I wouldn't assume that would happen.
Thank you. Yeah, I used the wrong word. I think our investment advisors just look at, you know, the various things that we own that have value and advise.
Well, save you on accommodation fees from that aspect for sure.
Well, absolutely, right. Mm. I know. And then I guess my final question, and then I can turn it over to you, is, and this is, you know, full disclosure, I'm a lawyer, which is why I'm asking this.
Please.
When we enter into a contract with you, what is the governing law? You know the governing
Japan,
law?
Japan governing law. Okay. We're a Japanese company, so it has to be under Japan's law.
I figured, but I thought I would ask.
Okay. Yeah.
Great. I think those are my high-level questions at this point. Tom, did I miss anything, or did you want to ask anything?
No, I don't think I have any questions, actually.
Oh, we'll have a lot more to-ing and fro-ing when we're looking at actual individual properties, because then we'll jump in with feedback to say what we like or don't like about them. So that's usually when the conversations will become a bit more involved. So I'll just I'll caveat everything that you read in the explanation of services document just to mention that we're currently really, really swamped with clients. So we can't onboard anyone for full purchase facilitation until the end of this year or early next year. What full purchase facilitation, meaning the fixed price, 5%, and we do everything on your behalf. You just need to make bottom line decisions and you just need to talk to us. So that we're not going to be able to do for the next few months. What I have been doing in the few months since we have started becoming a bit too swamped is I've been putting people in touch with a foreigner-friendly agent who can handle the logistics of the purchase in English remotely on your behalf. So same as we would have done on a practical level. But they're not going to, they're realtors, so they're not going to have any strategic, like what we just talked about, the, you know, what age is better to buy, what properties to look out for, what things you need to, you know, make sure to prioritize one over another. They don't do that. So we point them at properties, or they help us research properties and they help facilitate the purchase. That's what they're there to do. And we've been coming in just for a few hundred dollars, which is a lot cheaper too, just to hold people's hand along the way as they work with the agent on completing the purchase. So that we're happy to do anytime, but if you want us to do everything on your behalf and you only wanted to be talking to us, then that'll have to wait until early next year.
Okay, yeah, we can talk about the timing that works for us and let you know.
But both ways work. I mean, the consulting route, the hand-holding route is a bit cheaper, but it works just as smoothly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Okay, cool.
Are you going to have like a queuing system for?
It's going to be more a case of floodgates open, floodgates close. Like now, okay, now we're ready to bring on new customers, and then everyone will be able to swamp us. But we moved offices, and also because of growing pains, we hired and now training 5 new staffers, and just my partner bookkeeping nightmare. So my partner just said stop for a while, please. And I'm a good boy, so I've complied.
That makes sense. Yeah. I think I'm inclined to say, Tom, that we just will want to wait till the beginning of the year so that we can work with you, you know.
Yeah, I think so. Since this is our first purchase, we need
right.
Integrated handholding.
Yep.
I think we will.
Perfectly fine. Whatever is convenient for you. But if at any point, let's say, I don't know, a property comes in that you're super keen on and you don't want to miss out on, then we can always go the consulting route. Again, it's a smooth process. I've been doing it for a few months now with at least one agent that I very much trust, so that should be fine.
Great.
Okay. That sounds excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Until then, by the way, don't be shy to send listings our way and ask us for our 2 cents on them. We don't need to charge you anything before we're actually starting to contact third parties, so we're always happy to talk shop and give you feedback on listings.
That's
really
nice of you. Thank you.
That's really nice of you. That's great. So then what are the next steps for now? I guess we should wait until early next year and then we can sign your services agreement and proceed at that point. Is that?
Yeah. So unless you find anything that you want to move on quicker, let's touch base again around late November-ish.
Right,
and
okay.
By then I should be better placed to tell you to let you know exactly when we're able to onboard, and then we can make decisions if we want to go ahead with the engagement documents or if we want to go the consulting route again.
Excellent.
All right.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, and one last thing. Do you have? I'm sure you do. Do you have a couple client references you could provide to us?
Yeah. Of course.
US
based or particular portfolio size or holiday homeowners, investors, send me maybe a message or an email with what kinds of customers you'd like to talk to, and I'll put you in touch with a couple. I mean, I'll need to wait for them to confirm that it's okay to refer, but usually it wouldn't be a problem.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
I think that was all I had at this point. So exciting to be moving forward on it.
Same here. One way or the other, we'll get there, I promise. We always do.
That's great.
Yeah, Tom, do you have stuff you want to say?
No, other than have a great holiday.
Thank you. Thank you. Looking forward to that one, actually.
Good.
Will you get to take some time off?
Yes, Chica asked me if I can take our son somewhere and give her the house to herself for a week, so I'm going to do that, yeah.
Have a great.
That's fun.
Yeah. All right, well, have a good weekend, and we'll speak soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know, they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
All right, so for our second conversation, this is with another couple, and they're also shopping for a holiday home, but in their case, a single family home. And we chat a bit about that type of property, but also about visas, the digital nomad versus extended tourist options, management of properties, and more specifically, remote management of a home for owners who don't live in Japan. And on that same note, about remote viewings of properties for buyers who aren't physically in the country. We also talk utilities, insurance, renovations, repairs, you name it. So another short but very thorough conversation, which will hopefully bring some value to you if you're also in the market for your first holiday home purchase here. Have a listen. Testing 1, 2, 3. Can you say something?
Hello.
Okay, perfect. You're not seeing it because it's not via Zoom. I'm just recording it on an audio recorder. Cool. So I've reviewed your email. Let me just get back to it. We originally were talking about a second home, 75,000 to 200,000, Yokohama, Kanagawa, or Tokyo with dogs. And okay, so the short answer to all of your questions is yes, we do all of these things that you've mentioned. So everything related to the purchase process itself, all the way until you get the title deed in your hand. And then management, yes, to tax, utility bills, also insurance, which I think you haven't mentioned in there, which is kind of crucial, as well as I'm not sure. So you're visiting, this is going to be a holiday home, second home. You're not planning to move to Japan at any point, right? Yeah. Do you know how long you'll be at the property every year?
3 to 6 months.
Okay.
Exploring new digital nomad visa, but it's really difficult to find information since it's so brand new. So I think 6 months would be the maximum per year for
Unless they've changed anything, it doesn't really offer any benefits compared to a tourist visa, and you have to apply and comply and jump through a lot more hoops. And it's also just valid for 6 months at a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can get 3 months tourist visa and then extend it without leaving the country normally for another 3 months.
That would have been my question, is how do you extend without them thinking you're sort of cheating the system? Because I know that's, it's an issue if people stay long term and do that, but I was curious if that's...
Oh, no, you're allowed 2-3 month periods every year, depending on the country. Sometimes they'll let you extend it within Japan, but even if they don't, it's a ferry trip to Korea or Taiwan or something, and then, or a very cheap flight to another destination. That might be the only... disadvantage compared to a digital nomad visa, but I don't know. I mean, I can put you in touch with an immigration lawyer, although I don't think you need that for just a digital nomad visa.
Yeah, I doubt it. I'm still kind of weighing it out, just because of that concern with the hopping in and out every 3 months issue, but. Between getting the COE and the visa right, and then that tight window of time between getting those approved, and actually, yeah, it might be more trouble than it's worth. So
yeah, I only know a handful of people who actually went for that, and it's not like anybody's going to come in the house and check if you're actually working on your PCs or anything. So I wouldn't really be concerned about that. But that, yeah, totally perfect. Okay, so based on that, you would probably need, at least for the time when you're not here, cleaning and airing services as well, which we can also arrange for you, because you've been here before, you know what humidity is like in Japan. If somebody doesn't open the doors and windows and do some light vacuuming once a month, the mold can really eat up your interior very quickly. So that's probably another service you'll need. And then depending on the house, you might need yard or garden maintenance. So we can put all of that in place, as well as other more non-routine stuff. Like if you have a septic tank, there'll be septic tank maintenance. If you happen to find a house, it's rare, but if you happen to find a secondhand home with the solar panels, you'll need a contract for that. So yes, everything we can do that. Those are all the routine services, and then which come with a fixed price. And then the non-routine services, we just charge by the hour. So if you need repairs, renovation, deliveries. I've also got another company that provides other non-property related services. So furniture, shopping, delivery, assembly, registering a car, that kind of thing. So we do offer a one-stop shop, either with NTI or with my second company or both. The prices I'll send your way a bit later, but they're basically, they're fixed price for most of the services, but they're all based on the number of hours that we know that it takes us. And the average, sorry, not the average, the price per hour is 4,000 yen plus tax, so 4,400 yen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the short answer to your questions there.
Okay, yeah. No, that's very good to know, because another sort of sub-question that popped in my mind recently was the whole issue of being there for deliveries and for furniture, you know, versus showing up after international flight with our dogs going, okay, we have no bed, we have no anything.
Yeah. So we can, I mean, we'll discuss the purchase process in a minute, but during the purchase process and also afterwards, for setup of connections and utilities and deliveries, whatever, there will often be a case where somebody has to be physically present at the property. So depending on where you'll end up buying, we'll either go ourselves, or if it's closer and cheaper to send somebody in from Osaka or Tokyo, then we'll do that. But if you end up getting a place in, for example, Hokkaido or Okinawa, then those are the three cities. So one on the east, one on the west, one in the center of Japan kind of thing. Those are the three cities where we can send people from. So we're never going to have staffers that we can easily tap into in Hokkaido or Okinawa, so that would be a bit of an expensive trip, but still cheaper than international, I guess, right?
Yeah. And we're definitely not looking at Hokkaido, Okinawa, staying on the main.
Just as examples, I mean, a lot of people buy Niigata, Nagano, so same kind of story. If it's those locations, somebody will come in from either Tokyo or Osaka. What else can I answer for you?
I know we had some more granular questions around the viewing process itself and fees associated there and kind of setting that up. I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but I believe I did. We've secured our tickets. We'll be there the first 2 weeks of October.
Yep.
So just kind of thinking about how far in we have to back into planning for those viewings, and then what the different pricing arrangements would look like versus, you know, whether we do the Zoom or in person or third party.
Yep, gotcha. So I'll first explain how we normally work, and then I'll caveat all of that to say how we're working at the moment, because we're a bit swamped with clients and new staffers and training and so forth. So generally the way we would normally be working is you pay us a fixed price for the purchase. Our minimum, regardless of how much the property costs, is 5% of 10 million yen for houses. It's cheaper for condo units, but you're looking at a house. So 5% of 10 million yen, which is 500,000 yen plus tax, so 550. In your case, you also have the 10% discount, I think. You were introduced to us by the... I see intro on your original... How did you actually find us?
Well, I don't know if it was through the podcast or through my subscription to Cheap Houses Japan with Michael.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, so Cheap Houses Japan gives you a 10% discount. So... that kind of removes the 10% consumption tax. So 500,000 would be a fixed price for the purchase. And that will normally represent you, without having to pay us anything else, all the way from the initial research to settlement until you actually receive the title deeds to your new home. To a point, so we include up to 20 different inquiries for 20 different properties and up to 10 up to 10 viewings. Okay, that would normally, unless you're super picky, that would normally cover most people's purchase. And then if the only situations where you'll have to pay us anything extra is if we have to go in person. So, for example, most realtors, again, Yokohama, Tokyo might be a bit different. They're a bit more international oriented and tech savvy there. But in many locations, I'd say in most locations in Japan, old school realtors can't really wrap their heads around the concept of a remote viewing and Zoom and all of that. So we would, in at least 50% of cases, have to send somebody over if you're not here to do that in person. So if we have to send someone over, again, trip costs would apply. And if you're here and we can just do it via Zoom, or if the agent can do it via Zoom for us, then there's no added cost. Other occasions where you'd have to pay us separately for trip costs is if the agent or the seller, for example, again, are very old school and they insist on a face-to-face contract signing and deposit payment meeting, like, you know, coming in with a suitcase of cash and doing it all on the spot, then in that case, we'd have to charge for trip costs as well.
Okay.
If there are... go ahead.
Is that still a frequent practice that where they kind of
No, not as frequent. But again, once you get beyond the major cities, the real estate industry tends to be very old school still. So it does occasionally happen in cases of new developments, which is not going to be the case in your case, but they do demand somebody come in person. So I'd say 50-50 chance of that. Usually we can do it remotely, but it really depends on where the property is located and what the agent and the seller are like. The sellers are the ones that are usually elderly folks, Japan being Japan with its population trends. So they sometimes want a face-to-face meeting, which we can't avoid.
Okay.
So now that I've explained all of that, let me do the caveat. So at the moment, because we can't onboard people for full... So the full purchase representation that I've just described so far means you just communicate with us and you just need to make bottom line decisions. And then we do everything in front of all the third parties involved. That we cannot do at the moment. I hope we'll be back to it by October, November, when all of the new staffers are fully trained and functional. But until then, what I've been doing in the last few months is I've been putting people in touch directly with a foreigner friendly realtor. They're normally based in Tokyo. That's where we've got access to most of the foreigner-friendly realtors. And they will handle all of the logistics of the purchase remotely in English on your behalf, same as I've just explained. The only thing they don't do is, being realtors, they're not going to have any strategic conversations with you. So they're not necessarily going to tell you, they can do the research or you can do the research, but they're not going to tell you, okay, this property has some red flags there and this property is, you know, we would prefer to recommend this one because of ABC. They're not going to do all of that. So you point them at a property and they help you purchase it. So for that purpose, we come in as consultants, 10-hour retainer, 66,000 yen, which is a lot cheaper than our 500 for the full facilitation. And then we make a chat group, WhatsApp or Line, whatever is convenient. And then I can jump in with feedback at any point. I can guide the realtor on what due diligence we want to do and tell them if we need a structural inspection, review documents before you sign them, raise red flags if I see them, that kind of thing. And that 10-hour retainer would normally suffice for a single property purchase, unless, again, you're super picky. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today. So the total costs with this scheme would be lower. The question is how much lower they would be. So if it's a normal procedure, the way it works in Japan is the listing agent charges the seller and the buyer side agent, whoever brings in the buyer, charges the buyer. In some cases, listing agents are just greedy and they don't want to share their commission with the buyer side agent. So if that happens, you will have to pay the buyer side agent separately. But their fees are still lower than our full purchase facilitation fees. So it'll either be a lot cheaper or a little bit cheaper than hiring us to as we would have done to do the full thing.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm throwing a lot of info on you. Let me know if you want me to slow down at any point, but I can send you documents explaining all of that later.
That would be great to pour over the documents. Yep, I'm taking notes and processing.
I think Faye's already forwarded our explanation of services document, right?
Yep.
So that covers most of it, I think, as far as management and purchase goes. But I'll fill in the blanks if we need to later.
Okay. So let's see if we. Say that we wanted to say, let's, you know, make the engagement official, go and assuming it might end up being this sort of slightly different process that you've laid out here, where you might act as the consultant on retainer while we work with the other realtor.
Oh, we're not realtors, by the way. We are a separate. So even if you would have hired us, there would still be a realtor fee involved. We're a totally different service. Yeah.
Yeah, understood. Thank you. When should, I would imagine we would need to get started pretty quick as far as if we're looking at first week of October already.
Well, I mean, a lot of the properties wouldn't be on the market much longer than a month, so probably beginning of September would be the best time to hit, but definitely the research and shortlisting we can start, I guess, in August. But again, properties that we research and review in August might not be there at the start of October. So maybe towards the end of August, beginning of September would be the best time to actually start making inquiries.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been bookmarking listings for months now, and some of them are still open, and even my dream listings, which is a bit surprising to me. And I don't know if that's something where I can share that list with you and get some feelers as to why.
Yeah, for sure. But both we and the buyer side realtor really don't mind which properties you're looking into or where they came from. If something's on the market for a long time and it's priced reasonably, there is probably something that we'll find out during due diligence. The agent or the seller will divulge some information that might make us think twice, or maybe a structural inspection has already been conducted and the results were not that hot, so some buyers pulled out, depending on case by case. Or, I mean, some of them might just be in locations that, you know, nobody wants to buy except foreigners who want a holiday home. I don't know. You'll have a lot more once we actually start reviewing individual properties, usually.
I think so.
At some point you're going to want just ideas and information and what we're looking for a home, probably more specifically than vacation home, two people with dog dogs.
Well, I got the budget and I got a approximate list of locations, which I'm assuming you might be amending once you look into other spots. But I don't know. I mean, how strict is your criteria? Do you have any specific features that are must-haves? Or I'm assuming you want, for example, reasonably sized backyard garden, considering the dogs, right?
Well, it doesn't have to be actually extremely large. I think a little bit of green space would be nice, but actually we don't want to have, I think, too much yard maintenance.
Yep, that can get pretty expensive, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. I think kind of doing more like the walk with the poo bag and take the dogs on walks kind of thing, because they're small dogs.
Yep.
I think I have, we're very flexible, but it's things like trying to keep it within that window of some amount of earthquake standards, you know, within the past couple of decades.
That will mean that you're going to be towards the top end of your budget. Yeah, because the latest earthquake resistance standards for wooden structures, as opposed to concrete buildings, is the year 2000. Right. So it's not as crucial as for concrete buildings, but they have added like a certain minimum standard for the concrete foundation that has to be there and some of the supporting walls. So prior to that, doesn't really make much of a difference. So if we're aiming for something that's under 30 years, meaning 2000 and younger, that would probably, depending on location, but probably be, I doubt 75,000, maybe closer to 120 as a starting point.
Okay. That's, and it's sort of about just balancing out, you know, if one criteria really outweighs a bunch of the rest, I think we can again be pretty flexible.
If you are flexible, then I would definitely advise that the one thing you want to be compromising the least on is the age of the structure, because they're not really built to last in Japan. Non-durable materials, unless they were built in the last 10-15 years or pre-World War II, like those big kominkas in the countryside with the huge wooden pillars, they're built to last. But they also require specialized artisans to work on those special features. So any kind of repair and maintenance can cost up to 4 or 5 times as much as a modern home. So because you're probably going to be purchasing in the range where they are more flimsy and non-durable, anything beyond 30-35 years will start with annual expenses of an average, let's say, $2,000-$3,000 a year. And once we get beyond 40-45 years of age, it's more like $3,000-$4,000 a year. which is a statistical average. I mean, you'll have 5-6 years where everything's cool, and then the roof goes for like 20,000-30,000. So on average, somewhere between 2,000-4,000, and it gets higher as the property gets older. Also, the structural inspection, which we would advise to do on anything that's younger than 30 years, would have a far higher likelihood of discovering major issues with older properties as opposed to younger ones. So if you end up paying, you know, $1,000 or whatever the case may be for a structural inspection, you probably want to do that on a maximum of 2-3 properties, not 20 of them, right?
Yeah.
Because that's like half the price of the property again.
And I'm sure we'll dig more into all the details of the criteria later, like when we kind of kick off and make this official. But I can definitely provide a list of those.
We still got a bit of time. I mean, actual relevant listings for you to view, again, probably no point in looking at those before the beginning of September, unless it's something that, like you said, happens to be on the market for a long, long time. So we can... You don't even have to pay us for like just, you know, emails and feedback and stuff. So we can start with some samples that you've looked at, and I'll give you my feedback on those. And then based on that, you can probably refine your search criteria. So by the time we get to the beginning of September, we'll know exactly what we're looking for by then.
Okay. Yeah, that makes good sense to me. That will kind of help me nix these if they appear more attractive.
And also, just to clarify, we're happy to consult you along the process, but I'm also perfectly happy to just put you in touch directly with a foreigner-friendly agent and leave you to it. You don't have to hire us just for the introduction. We're happy to introduce regardless.
Okay. Definitely consider that. Anything else on your end? No? Well, I think we're in a pretty good position to be able to, I would love to be able to look over some more of sort of the detailed breakdown of some of the fees that you had mentioned at the top. And I will definitely take you up on that offer of just sending you your way a couple of those listings that we have been looking at. So that I can start narrowing down that criteria for you.
Sorry, go ahead, Zach.
I don't know anything.
Okay. So shall we start with that? I mean, there's no point involving the realtor yet, not until we're actually closer to the viewing dates. So maybe we just start with, are we connected on WhatsApp or Line or any of those?
No.
Not yet, right?
Can be.
I'm a lot more responsive there than on emails. Just it takes me a good few days to get to emails these days. And if I'm traveling, it can take me up to a week to reply to emails. So I'll be a lot more responsive. If you want to add me, you got my mobile number and my email signature there. Just add me on any of the FaceTime or Line or WhatsApp. The realtors here in Japan will be more on WhatsApp and Line, so maybe not FaceTime so much. So one of those two would be best, and then we'll just send me listings over there, and I'll respond with some feedback, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
All right. Cool.
All right.
So I will wait to be added, and we'll kick it off then.
That sounds great.
All right. Thanks for your time.
You.
Talk to you soon.
Right.
You
too.
Bye-bye. So there you have it. Two similar but slightly different conversations there with two similar but slightly different buyers. And if you did find some value in this episode and you're also in the market for similar properties, you definitely want to take the chance and join the summit this coming weekend. That's Saturday, Sunday, 5 and 6 October in Shibuya or via online streaming. If you can't be with us in person, that's the next best thing. And you'll be able to not only watch the presentations, but also network with other participants in the chat room, as well as float questions to the speakers to be answered live on stage. So well worth the very affordable streaming ticket. Grab it today. We won't be able to sell any tickets on the day. And in particular, if you're joining us again for the gala dinner, those tickets are only on sale for 2 more days. We have to let the restaurant know the final number of people, including number of vegetarian courses specifically, by October 2nd. So get on to summit.realestate.jp if you still haven't, and see you all this weekend. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!